Upon taking office, I will issue a temporary moratorium on new agency regulation. Americanism, not globalism, will be our new credo.
Walmart on Monday announced it would buy online shopping site Jet.com for about $3 billion. The deal appears to be the largest ever acquisition of an e-commerce company, and it comes as Walmart tries to close a big gap between itself and Amazon in online shopping revenue.
I'm Ed Bastian. I'm speaking to you today from our operations and customer center, where we've got Delta teams working around the clock to restore our system capabilities. I apologize for the challenges this has created for you with your travel experience. The Delta team is working very, very hard to restore and get these systems back as quickly as possible.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Steve Grzanich. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell, and welcome to another business day. We have lots to talk about today. All you can eat fries? Sure. Yes, please. We'll talk about the McDonald's of the future coming up with D.L. Buss also a little bit later in the program. It is a big physics conference. It's happening right now in Chicago. More than 1,500 of the world's top physicists are here. We'll tell you why, and we'll talk to a couple of them about what's happening and what the future holds in terms of science. But first, let's head to the WGN Market Desk and find out what the markets are doing. You heard Vic tell you a little bit of the numbers there, but here's what's going on behind the scenes. Generally, markets still are buoyed by last week's jobs report, but yesterday we saw the markets as they climbed during the day fall then at the end of the day. And what was driving that, we really don't know. Maybe more concern about China. The consumer price index there gained 1.8% last month over a year earlier. Asian stocks generally little changed today after Wall Street closed flat yesterday. There were reports of a new OPEC meeting that sparked a brief rally in the day. Benchmark U.S. crude oil fell below about $43 a barrel. The dollar weakened against the yen and gained against the euro. Here's what's coming up on the day ahead. The morning report today is from the Labor Department. They're going to release second quarter productivity data, and the Commerce Department releases wholesale trade inventories for June. Valeant Pharmaceuticals reports quarterly financial results before the market opens, and Disney reports quarterly financial results after the market closes. There is still developing news this morning with Delta Airlines. The company has tweeted out this morning that at least 200, between 200 and 250 flights will be canceled this morning as the airline struggles to come back to normal operations after having to cancel 700 flights yesterday. 26 others delayed. Tens of thousands of travelers were impacted by a power outage that knocked out the Delta computer system worldwide and grounded flights for hours. The computer systems are working again a few hours later, but Delta says it is still working to accommodate stranded passengers. The challenge today will be finding enough seats on planes during the busy summer travel season to accommodate the tens of thousands of passengers, as I said, who had their flights impacted yesterday, either by a cancellation or a delay. Last month, the average Delta flight was 87% full. It's a big business airline as well, so you can see what the impact was of this. For passengers, hardship from the early morning meltdown was compounded by the fact that Delta's flight status updates later weren't working either. And instead of being able to stay home, many passengers only learned about the flight problems when they arrived at the airport. Now, the airline says today that all of that seems to be taken care of, but they're still telling you to call the airline ahead of time and call the airport, double check on what's happening with your flight before you leave home. Now, the airline posted a video apology by the company's CEO and offered refunds and $200 travel vouchers to people whose flights were canceled or delayed by at least 3 hours. Well, the big news this week, if you're a McDonald's fan, is the McDonald's of the future. There are not flying saucers or, well, there may be robots to a certain extent, but it's in St. Joseph, Missouri, and D.L. Buss is with us this morning. He's been writing about this. D.L. is with us from Brand Channel. He also writes for Forbes. D.L., good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
So have you been to the McDonald's of the future? I know you've seen it.
No, none of us have been to the future, Steve. But, No, actually, I haven't. Heard some reports about it and did a piece for Brand Channel yesterday. And apparently, I mean, McDonald's of the future has been coming, you know, for a long time in a sense. And there are, in another sense, there are McDonald's of the future all over the world because of all the experimentation that McDonald's has been doing under the new CEO of a year or so, Steve Easterbrook. And, you know, if you think about McDonald's as in part teaching its way at Hamburger University, you got to think that the curriculum is really changing. You know, a generation ago was, how do you make a Big Mac in under a minute, keep your bathrooms really clean? Well, now you have to major in software writing because, you know, you mentioned McDonald's of the future. There are some other things going on besides there within McDonald's, experimentation with tablets at their stores in the UK. There's this whole customization push called Create Your Taste, which, you know, creates its digital challenges of its own. And then McDonald's is also trying to be an innovator when it comes to things like mobile payment. So the whole reason that McDonald's is going to be re-headquartering in the Loop, you know, instead of Oak Brook in the next couple of years, has to do with attracting the kind of people who know how to put those sorts of things together. So the McDonald's of the future involves this place in St. Joe, Missouri, and also all this experimentation that they're doing, you know, all around the world to try to regain the relevancy that they once had, you know, culturally and especially with millennials.
We'll get into some more of the details about this store specifically. It does include some things that we've seen elsewhere in McDonald's before, but my question is, why St. Joseph, Missouri?
Honestly, I don't really know. I think there was a franchisee there, I forget his name, but he seemed to be really gung-ho about doing this. And that's a big part of McDonald's culture, is working with its franchisees, working with the entrepreneurs who, you know, help make the company what it is. In fact, this guy was talking about how the experiments that are taking place at his store represent McDonald's pivot from a fast food brand to a fast casual brand, which is a really interesting aspect of what McDonald's is doing that I'm sure you'll want to talk more about.
And a little bit contradictory, too, because, you know, I remember Steve Easterbrook saying that McDonald's would never replace its employees with robots. There was that discussion earlier this year. But there's a lot of automation involved here.
Yeah, and it's a matter of, I mean, McDonald's has always been about efficiency and, you know, just finding ways to eliminate unnecessary steps. And in the sense of not replacing employees with robots, of course that's going to be the case, but McDonald's has to be a viable company going into the future in order to grow and, you know, provide the jobs that they do. They've got to take these steps to be relevant technologically, to be more efficient. And so what they have to do is be more efficient in the back end so that they can enhance, I guess you'd say, their famous people orientation in the front end. So if you've got McDonald's becoming, for instance, doing more table service like a typical fast casual restaurant would do, you need people for that. You can't have Rosie the robot, you know, kind of wheeling out there. You need people who are trained in personal service, that kind of thing. Hopefully, maybe then you can eliminate some more of the tedium on the back end and the preparation of the food so that you can use your people sort of more effectively to create that new kind of atmosphere that McDonald's is trying to do.
Well, you say that, Dale, but I've seen this robot that's actually working at a Burger King or is it a Pizza Hut in Japan that's actually delivering stuff to tables. So I wouldn't go that far yet.
Yeah,
but
okay. Well, Japan's way out there. You know that.
Right. So. Well, we're talking with Dale Buss this morning from Brand Channel, who's written about the McDonald's of the future. We'll get into more details about what's actually inside of the store and what the hope is for McDonald's going forward and whether or not we might see one of these in the Midwest closer to Chicago soon.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, I'm Dave Schreiber. Asian stock markets were little changed today. The Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries announced Monday that oil ministers of the 14-nation organization will meet next month, well ahead of their previously scheduled November meeting. On Wall Street Monday, stocks ended lower after a week in which the major indexes reached record highs. drug companies were among the biggest losers, while energy shares rose in connection to the price of oil. The Dow lost 14 points, the S&P fell 2 points, and the NASDAQ composite fell 8 points. Delta Airlines says it is investigating the cause of a computer system meltdown that forced the delay or cancellation of at least half of the carrier's flights Monday. Delta says 1,000 flights were canceled Monday. More cancellations are expected this morning. I'm Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program 521. We're talking about the McDonald's of the future.
It's just the beginning of what's different here at this McDonald's. It's been an exciting journey. Our vision to bring a truly modern burger and breakfast restaurant to our community is finally a reality. After you place your order, you can relax and enjoy, because we'll deliver your meal right to you. Table service with a smile.
That's Chris Habiger, the manager and franchise owner of this new McDonald's in St. Joseph, Missouri, as he held a news conference earlier this week to open the restaurant. A video of that we've seen of it. Dale Buss is with us from Brand Channel this morning. A lot of computer kiosks, big screens on the walls where people can place their orders. Looks like modern seating as well. It looks a lot different from a regular McDonald's, doesn't it, Dale?
Yeah, and to kind of address that point, can I loop back to just talking about the driving force behind this just for a moment? I mean, you mentioned Steve Easterbrook, and really it's interesting because he's has emerged kind of as the perfect CEO at the perfect time for McDonald's. I mean, it used to be when you were running McDonald's in the days of Don Thompson and before him, Jim Skinner, the question was, what's the next big product, right? I mean, but the last major successful huge new product that McDonald's has had was McCafe Coffee, and that's now, I don't know, it's going on maybe almost 10 years, something like that. You know, under Don Thompson, they tried chicken wings. It was supposed to be huge. It was supposed to be the next big moneymaker. Well, that flopped. And I think the key to Easterbrook's success so far, or at least the prospect of success, is that he recognizes the complexity of the task for McDonald's in a fast food or in a restaurant business that's just gotten more and more complex. So it's not even just about having healthier food on the menu now. It's really about trying to figure out how to make that experience at the restaurant appeal to all sorts of people, you know, particularly to millennials who are so technology oriented. And so, you know, at this McDonald's of the future, of course, they're drawing people in with a traditional promotion. They're offering free French fries with a customized burger. And so that's going to bring a lot of people all by itself. But I mean, there's something called a light table. You know, it's kind of a novelty where you can sit and there's a dramatically improved kids play area. And of course, it's always been something that McDonald's has been known for. There's all sorts of ways to order digitally. On this Create Your Taste platform. There's a dessert bar. There's table service. They're experimenting with table service there. You can charge your cell phone. So in many ways, McDonald's is becoming more like some of the other places that have been drawing from it, you know, like a Panera, like Chipotle. And that's simply the way the brand has to change in order to you just can't be the McDonald's of old and expect to survive today.
Yeah, and along those lines, part of the deal at this McDonald's is this customizable burger and chicken option where you can use toppings. You mentioned Chipotle, like something called Pico Guacamole. There are other toppings as well. So it's not just the same old McDonald's food.
They're actually ketchup, mustard, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they're taking all of these things that I think they've seen work in other markets and maybe mixing them into this one?
Yeah. And again, the experimentation, you know, within McDonald's has been broad. I mentioned in the UK. In the UK, they're experimenting with tablets at the table, like you see at so many fast casual restaurants. And you know, it really is interesting the role of this franchisee. You know, that you had the clip from that's Chris Habiger. I think that's even another change with McDonald's to allow a franchisee to have a very high profile role in promoting change that may affect the entire rest of the company is a very interesting move by Easterbrook. And again, another sign of a change that he's trying to bring.
Yeah, because you would think that to something this big that he would be out in front on it. And Chris Habiger, he was on every media outlet, I think, in the world.
Exactly.
Yeah. You mentioned the idea of things that McDonald's has done successfully. For investors, they were concerned that the all-day breakfast may have hit the wall, and we saw earnings not so hot at McDonald's this past quarter. Is his luck running out? Is Steve Easterbrook's luck running out in this area?
You know, it's going to be an interesting ride for investors because, as I mentioned before, it used to be they could kind of hold their breath and see what the next big product announcement was. And, you know, when it was introduced, was it popular with consumers? Did it move the needle? Okay, you know, take a sigh of relief and say, okay, McDonald's is solid for a while. That just isn't the formula anymore, and I don't think it's going to be very easy for investors to figure out. I think probably the best continuing indicator of how this is all going is going to be the regular quarterly reports on same-store sales, because that's still where it's all at. Is what Easterbrook is doing getting traction, you know, especially in the U.S., but also abroad? That was the problem that Don Thompson had. He could never reverse that, and that was finally why he had to be shown the door. And Easterbrook has had some success at reversing the same-store sales trend. And that's what investors really need to keep their eye on.
We have about 30 seconds left, but we talked about jobs earlier and people being replaced. This store specifically hired 100 new employees. I don't know if that's average for one store or not. It seems like a high number.
Well, I don't know if it's average or not, but certainly if it works and you've got table service being provided, you know, that's going to be something that will boost the job numbers and just overall success. I mean, that's what it's all about in business and the economy, right? You provide jobs by succeeding in an economy that still, for the most part, is capitalistic, and that's simply what McDonald's is trying to do.
Dale Buss with Brand Channel. You can follow Dale at Twitter at Dale D. Buss, and you can check him out, too, at Brand Channel, and he also writes for Forbes. Dale, good of you to be with us this morning.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. If you see a lot of people walking around looking at the sky this week in Chicago, it is because a lot of them are astrophysicists. They're in town for something called the IChep Conference. This is one of the big conferences of the year. It's the International Conference of Physics that is happening here. Nearly 1,500 physicists, astrophysicists from all across the country are in Chicago for this conference. They're talking about a number of things, the discovery of the Higgs boson, for example, the gravitational waves discovery from earlier in the year. All of this is being sponsored by Fermilab, which is right in our backyard, also by the University of Chicago. And joining us this morning here on The Opening Bell to talk a little bit more about discovery and also this conference are two of the people that are at the forefront of this conference. First, from Fermilab, Andre Sellis, who is one of the communication specialists there, and also Clara Nellist. She is a particle physicist working at the Accelerator Laboratory in Orsay, France, and also working with the Large Hadron Collider at CERN in Switzerland. You'll be hearing me mention CERN a lot in this interview. It's the big super collider that's the cousin to the super collider that we had here in the Chicago area for many years, the Large Hadron Collider. Both of our guests joined me via Skype this morning. Claire, let me start with you. First of all, if you could maybe give our listeners a sense of, you know, why we should all pay attention to things like the Higgs boson and the Large Hadron Collider.
I think it's the greatest human endeavor is to find out more about our universe and to really understand our place in it. And the particle physics is just one of the tools we have to try and understand our place in the universe.
And when we talk about that, why do we need to know those specific things? Is it to better understand how we live, where we're going as a species, all of the above?
Well, personally, for me, my motivation is curiosity. I want to understand more about the world, the universe, from the very smallest particle to cosmology and space. But we don't know the kind of stuff that we will get from it. For example, at CERN, to be able to communicate between physicists, the World Wide Web was invented, and now everybody uses that. So the motivations of most of the physicists I know is just curiosity, but the things that come out from it can really benefit people. But we can't predict that. We don't know how these things are going to unravel.
For somebody who hasn't seen the CERN or photographs of it, it really is something out of science fiction. It's talk to me a little bit about this tool and how wonderful it is and how it's helping. I mean, it really does look like something out of science fiction.
So it's we have a 27-kilometer tunnel underground, and we accelerate particles with magnets that are colder than out of space. And the collisions are hotter than the center of the sun. So it really, all of these descriptions can come from a science fiction novel. And we have four experiments on the ring, four major experiments on the ring, that are taking the collisions of the protons and creating new particles and then measuring what comes from those collisions.
I remember when this CERN first went online, there was discussion that it might send us into some sort of time warp or destroy the Earth. There were all kinds of things that people who really didn't understand this talked about and were afraid of. But it really has proven to be sort of like the Hubble telescope, hasn't it? Like a big one of the greatest. Somebody said one of the greatest scientific tools we have.
Yeah, and it's. First of all, everything that happens at the Large Hadron Collider, all of these new particles that we create already happen in our atmosphere. So these high energy collisions are already happening above us. So we're not worried. We're not concerned about them. It's just that it's really hard to measure them in our atmosphere. So we're recreating stuff that's already happening, but in a controlled environment so that we can measure everything that comes out of these collisions.
The Higgs boson has been called the God particle. I wonder if you could explain that to our listeners, why it was called that.
It's really not my favorite term for it. Many physicists don't like that name. I think the history comes from a book somebody wanted to call. I don't know if I can say this on air. You might have to edit.
Yeah, I don't know that you can say it on the air either. But yeah,
the name of the book was not a fond term for the particle because we'd been looking for it for so long. It had been elusive for 50 years. So it was one physicist who was feeling quite. Stressed at finding this particle, it's not a favorite term among physicists.
The idea was that it's one of the original sort of Big Bang particles. Is that a simple way to say it?
Yeah, it's a particle that's throughout the universe. It's always been there. It's just that we had to create it to be able to measure it.
You talked about all of the scientists working on this together, and it brings to mind a recent conversation I had with some cancer doctors who are doing this moonshot, as they're calling it, approach to trying to cure cancer. Is this sort of similar to that with all of the scientists working on the same thing, trying to figure out things together instead of separately?
Well, I mean, I certainly think that particle physics in general is an international endeavor with everybody aligned towards the same goals, looking for answers to these mysteries about the universe. And it takes all of the people involved in order to do it. It's such a massive endeavor to build a machine the size of the Large Hadron Collider and to figure out how to operate it and where to look for these particular particles. It takes that massive amount of people in order to do it properly.
It's also an interesting comparison with the cancer doctors because actually, I mean, I also work on the development of detectors. And the detectors that I work on have now been used in PET scanners, positron emission tomography scanners, which can be used in detecting cancer. So because we're really at the forefront of scientific research and we're really pushing the boundaries of the detectors we use, the accelerator technology, the software, the design, everything that we learn is shared and can be used by people doing other research. So, for example, cancer research can benefit from what we're doing.
There's more than just the CERN being talked about at the International Conference on High Energy Physics. This was described to me, and I'm a science geek and nerd, as sort of the Lollapalooza for geeks and nerds and scientists. How big is this conference and why is it important? What kinds, if you could, maybe you could describe it in terms of its significance?
It's the largest high energy physics conference in the world. There are about 1,400 people registered for this conference at the Sheraton downtown. And it's where all of the different physics experiments get together to share their new results and share data and talk about the direction of the field and where it's going. It's actually very important for our field.
Yeah, we have talks on the Higgs, on top quarks, on neutrinos, cosmology, on the future experiments that we could have. It's really, we're spoilt for choice. I haven't been able to go to 10% of the talks I would love to go to. There's just so much great physics being discussed here. So I'm going to have to read the slides a little bit later to catch up.
And one of the great events that I saw was the Windy City Physics Slam, which was over the weekend. And this is where, everybody kind of got into a room and sort of, it's like a poetry slam. Talk to me about that, if you would.
Absolutely. A physics slam, we've been doing them at Fermilab for the last 4 years, and they've proven incredibly popular. Whenever we do one, it sells out months in advance of the event. So it is like a poetry slam. We get five physicists from around the world, and we give them each 10 minutes to make their field of study as interesting as possible for a lay audience. They can literally do anything they want. It's no rules at all except that 10 minutes. And then the winner is determined by audience applause. Our host this year was Tom Skilling, whom I'm sure you're familiar with. It's quite the event.
It is really kind of interesting, and it's really something that I wish was televised, because I would have loved to have watched that and had it recorded. But it brings me back to the discovery of gravitational waves after 100 years or so. And we sort of tried to explain that to our non-scientific listeners and how big it was. But if you could put that into perspective, too, I mean, that was just a huge thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a huge announcement. Einstein was proved right after 100 years. Not that we really needed any more proof that he was a great physicist, but it was a huge scientific achievement and a very exciting event.
One of the things I ask scientists when I have the opportunity is, if he's been right about all of those other things, is there a chance he's right about some of the other things that have been proven, like, for instance, wormholes?
I hope so. I mean, I'm a massive sci-fi nerd, so I love the idea of wormholes and being able to travel through space through them. But we have no evidence of them so far, and we have to keep looking.
The other thing at this conference, you'll be honoring one of our congressmen who has been really one of the champions of the science, Congressman Foster. Talk to me about this notion of support from lawmakers, from members of Congress, at a time when really science has been under fire. There are a lot of science non-believers, it seems.
We've been very fortunate at the representation that we get in Congress. Our representatives are behind what we do 100%, very interested in basic research. Congressman Foster, as you probably know, worked at Fermilab for a long time, so he's very familiar with the type of research that we do. And we're just very grateful at the response and the support that we get from our legislators.
I have one favor. If you guys discover a wormhole and you can start exploring the universe, please take me with you.
Oh, for sure.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Clara Nellis and Andre Celis from Fermilab, from the big conference in Chicago, the International Particle Physics Conference has about 1,400. It's called iChip. You can find it online, by the way. And the wonderful thing about this is that any one of the discussions that has been had there, you can find generally the information that's posted from that. So slides, as Clara mentioned, that as well. More information, sometimes video, at ICHEP2016.org. And, of course, you can follow Fermilab at Fermilab on Twitter. We appreciate both of our guests joining us on Skype this morning.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. 552 on the WGN Market Desk. The Dow futures pointing toward a tepid open this morning on Wall Street. up just about 9 points. The S&P futures up just a fraction. NASDAQ futures up just about 3. Market looking for direction this morning. Maybe things are better over on the commodity side of things. Let's bring in Orion Samuelson. Good morning, Orion.
Good morning, Steve. The weekly crop reports for the first time this growing season showed a slight decline in the condition of the corn crop. 74% good to excellent. It's down from 76% a week ago, but Wisconsin continues to lead. As a matter of fact, Wisconsin, both corn and soybeans, 88% good to excellent. Soybean conditions unchanged, 72% a week ago, 72% this week. And in the state numbers, Iowa getting a little closer to Wisconsin, 82% of the bean crop in Iowa reported good to excellent. Well, make it 9 days in a row that the USDA has announced sales of over 100,000 tons of soybeans to China or unknown destinations. It happened again yesterday as China came into the market and continued its buying spree. 246,000 tons of U.S. soybeans going to China. It's the ninth daily sales announcement in 9 trading days. Not so good at the Mercantile Exchange yesterday. Profit-taking undercut the live cattle futures. And so we saw August live cattle down 75 cents a hundredweight. And once again, August hogs finishing down 35 cents, but the rest of the months finished higher. County fairs, the Boone County Fair and Belvedere getting underway today. And Friday, the first real crop report of the year. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. This might be a thing we thought from our agriculture file this morning. Thankfully, this is not something that farmers in the United States have to deal with it. Perhaps maybe it is. But from the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, this morning comes a story out of Manitoba. Apparently, thieves have stolen hundreds of pounds of cucumbers from a farm there. The farm grows cucumbers. It's a big supplier to the area. And somebody looted all of the cucumbers from this farm one night recently. This is a huge agriculture theft. I've been searching this morning during this broadcast and before to see if agriculture theft is a big deal. It might be something that we approach in the future. But these thieves made off with, again, hundreds of tons of cucumbers from Manitoba in Canada. We also want to update a story on Delta this morning. If you have plans to fly on Delta, know that Delta has canceled 250 flights this morning as it looks to restore service after its big problems yesterday. We'll continue to follow your money throughout the morning on the Steve Cochran Show coming up next here on 720 WGN. And we'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning with another edition of The Opening Bell. Until then, have a wonderful day. I'm Steve Krasanich.